I call the House Finance meeting to order. Today is Tuesday, March 3rd, 2020, and the time is 9:03. Members present is Representative Knopf, Representative Laban, Representative Tilton, Vice Chair Ortiz, Co-Chair Foster, Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Wohl, Representative Josephson, Representative Merrick, and myself, Representative Johnston. On today's agenda, we have House Bill 121 and House Bill 209, both by Representative Thompson. My intention is to hear and hold these bills. And first, we'd like to bring up House Bill 121, an act relating to performance reviews and audits of state agencies, the University of Alaska, the Alaska court system, and providing for an effective date. To begin with, I'd like to invite Representative Thompson and his staff, Crystal Kahneman, to the table. Please put yourselves on the record and begin with your bill presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Steve Thompson. I'm a House representative representing House District 2 up in Fairbanks. I want to thank the committee for hearing our House Bill 121 today. House Bill 121 repeals the statutory obligation for performance review audits. In 2013, the House and Senate passed House Bill 30 that set out to audit all agencies. Four audits have been completed so far from three different agencies: Corrections, Education, Commission on Post-Secondary Education, and Health and Social Services. 15 agency audits remain on the books until the program is set to end in 2023. Funding requests have been denied for the last four fiscal years. This year it was $1.8 million request, which was denied again. Basically, this takes out of the statutes this requirement because we haven't been using it. So let's get it out of the books so it doesn't be printed every year, has to be shown in the budget every year, and then we take it out. So with me I have my staff. Crystal Kahneman is here to answer any questions, as well as Chris Curtis from Legislative Audit. And it's a very simple bill, and that's my presentation. Questions?
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Representative Thompson, I think I agree with you that if we're not doing it, then we're not doing it. But can you tell us, between its passage in 2016, did we get anything out of this? Did we learn anything?
The ones that were, through the Chair, the ones that were mentioned here that we did have completed, they had recommendations come back from the auditor. It was an auditor from the lower 48 that did this, and their recommendations didn't fit with Alaska. They were from the lower 48. So none of those recommendations were acted on. None of them were used. And then we decided that we couldn't afford to continue to do this and not have any results that we could utilize.
Thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Were the audits always intended to be outsourced to a outside agency, or was there ever the intent that we would do it internally?
Through the Chair, Representative Wohl, I'm not sure. I think that we have our legislative auditors here that could probably answer that for you.
Okay, thank you. I guess before she does, my guess is that they're pretty busy doing their own audits. I know we hear from them, and it sounds like they have a pretty full workload. So I don't know. Sounds like auditing, say, Hess is probably a pretty big lift. So maybe Ms. Curtis can answer that.
Ms. Curtis, would you like to please come up and introduce yourself, put yourself on the record?
Good morning. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state auditor. Just one point of clarification. These are not audits. They're not done in accordance with standards. They're not audits. Audits communicate a level of assurance up here in accordance with criteria, that type of thing. These are performance reviews facilitated by the Division of Legislative Audit. Yes, they were done by consultants, experts in the field. So they were intended to review all state departments over a 10-year period. And they did produce, we did, I think, three departments. They were intended to determine whether agencies were performing well. What could they do better? I believe there was a bit of an expectation gap that this was going to be the mode to help reduce the budget in anticipation that in the future we would have serious budget cuts. So this was passed effective July 1st, 2013, so before the budget decreased. These were not structured to be a mechanism to reduce the budget. Yes, as part of the reviews, agencies were required to provide a list of 10% general fund budget cuts. And then when the consultant came in and did their review, they were supposed to look at this list of cuts and determine whether they were reasonable in line with their review of the department. So there was a budget implication to the process, but mainly it was to determine whether what the departments could do in order to do their job better. And the reports themselves were fairly well received by the committee, the LBNA committee. Corrections, and I should say corrections in education were well received. The reports are out on the website. They're an excellent tool for reviewing a department, especially corrections and education. Health and social services was the other one, and it was a big lift. Our agency was responsible for helping create the scope of these reviews and hiring the contractor. And it was a heavy lift. And the contractor for HS&S came out in very big support of Medicaid expansion. And that wasn't well received by the committee. Again, they were defunded effective, I think, FY16. And one thing I want to mention is I think it's very difficult to review departments when there is such change. I mean, by the time you started, from when you started a review to when you ended it, you'd be looking at a different animal. So it's probably not the best climate to conduct these reviews until there's some stability.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question, though, kind of a follow-up. So were these audits, when they were enacted, not audits, reviews, these reviews were called for, was it with the realization that your department couldn't do these added things, and so they were a recognition that your department was already overburdened and that somebody else needed to delve into things a little deeper or at least have the time to do so?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, I wasn't in this position when they, I think it was in the works for years before, and then when I came into this position, they were passing it. But I believe the idea was modeled after the Texas Sunset Commission, to where it's just an important form of function of government to examine itself and make sure it's operating as efficiently and effectively as possible. And that takes experts in the field. So even if legislative audit were to do these, we would have to hire experts in the correctional industry or experts in education. So you get these experts in the field to do the deep dive.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Where's that going? I mean, it sounds like there's some value to these things, especially if you want to go through an agency and figure out if they're being efficient or if they're operating the best. I know the university's done a few of these, not McDowell, there's some other studies that have been done, and then they show, well, you could be doing better here, or you're spending too much money there, or that kind of thing. I mean, it sounds like there's value, but since we haven't been doing them, and it's, I guess, primarily because of the cost. Is there still a desire to do them? I know it was a legislative origin, but say, and it's not in your, it's not an audit. Where am I going with this? So let me ask you this. Was your department thinking they would, was it always the idea to outsource them? And were you guys supportive of this kind of thing?
Through the chair. My perspective on this is that I will do whatever this body wants me to do. I'll have to tell you that it was a lot of procurement, with three additional staff that have nothing to do with the audit function. So I kind of carved them out to the side. I interacted with the leader of this group, and you know, so it was a lot of extra work on my shoulders, a lot of editing and that type of thing. But from my perspective, if this body wants us to do performance reviews, we can do them. I can tell you, though, the impact of them, the communication of what this body is going to do with them was not well thought out and needed to be tweaked. So obviously, if folks don't even know they were done and they haven't been used, then something's wrong with the process. Now, I've been asked before, you know, how can we improve? And I have notes back from 4 years ago when we stopped this process of what could be done better. There would have to be, I believe, a rewrite of the process to make it effective. And whether you'd want to start from scratch is what I would recommend. But as far as I'm always supportive of reviews on how to make things, whether it's within on your priority list of what you want to spend funds on, that's a question to policymakers.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess thinking back in my banking days, banks are subject to a lot of audits, examinations, reviews, and maybe this is more a statement than a question or an observation, but in the banking world, you would have an internal review of a program, and lending is the most common because you want to know that you're making good credit decisions. But then it didn't stop there. You had an internal audit function, you had an external audit function, and then you had some folks from FDIC that would roll in on an examination. Mm-hmm. And part of their process was they would look at the reviews, internal audits, external audits, and then arrive at a conclusion in the soundness of the bank and its operations. Do you, as a state auditor, look at those performance reviews and make a conclusion about your work when you do an audit?
Through the chair, those reviews are not exactly helpful for our purposes. We are the external financial auditor. We're the independent financial auditor. The executive branch hasn't had an internal audit function for probably 15 years. I don't know however many states don't have an internal audit function, but they do not have an internal audit function. We have not really used these. The focus of these reviews don't really have much to do with the financial audit. If we did, we do performance audits periodically. If we did have one in these agencies, we would certainly look to these as a source.
Representative Josephson and then Representative Wolf.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Curtis, you asked something that intrigues me. So the state used to provide or pay for an executive internal audit function? It sounds like we did, and if we did, would it just be redundant of what we do through your office?
Through the chair, I believe that was eliminated under Knowles administration and Emily McConnell. There was an OMB director that I think there was 8 positions over there. Some of the functions were moved to the Division of Finance because there is a state single audit requirement function, and I believe they did internal reviews on a whole range of different topics. But yes, there used to be an internal audit function in the governor's office.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had the comment. It's sort of telling that when they did the review, say, of Hess and recommended Medicaid expansion, it wasn't well received. So they paid an outside group to show how they're doing business, made some recommendations, wasn't well received, so it didn't go along maybe with the presumption of the group. And now, of course, we have it. And
through the chair, I want to say that one of the things that are required of this performance review is that they have to quantify the fiscal impact of them. That particular audit, there was 3 parts to the our review. It produced over $2 million of savings. And it cost over $1 million to conduct. It did actually result in net savings to the state. And that was the only one. When I say it wasn't generally reviewed, it wasn't well received because there was aspects of it. When you hire consultants, believe it or not, they would typically recommend additional studies. You know, that is their you have to really keep an eye on consultants, making sure that they're only working with you and they have a certain, but they're also very passionate about the field they're in. And if you get folks passionate about the health, they're going to most likely be very supportive of that type of thing. So it was my opinion that it was not well received amongst the committee and amongst the legislature at that point.
Thank you. I guess my only other question as far as these reviews, was one of the approaches is, in our budget we have performance measures. Were those evaluated as part of this process, or was just a different process altogether?
Through the chair, yes, that was part of the process to obtain those performance measures. I have not seen much value in those, and it was not really key to any of the reviews.
Full disclosure, I have a very good friend who was one of the initiators of the performance measures.
In theory, it's a great thing.
Yeah.
But I have not seen the impact.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Any other questions?
Well, just real fast.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Curtis, you said that we saved money through the Hess review. Was that because of SB 74? How did the $1 million savings or $2 million materialize?
I have to check for sure, but I believe it had to do with some recommendations under OCS and how they were something to do with the federal reimbursement, to where they could change their procedures and maybe qualify for more federal reimbursement, and how they were documenting or the timing of it and that type of thing.
Thank you.
Okay, so Representative Knopp.
Peripheral Rep. Johnson, peripheral. I'm not sure who the question is for. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, in the first line of the second paragraph of the sponsor statement, it states 5 years, 4 completed audits, but it only lists 3 departments. Do we know what the 4th department is that had a completed audit?
Through the chair, we actually did 2 for Department of Education, 1 on ACP, and 1 on the department as a whole.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, Ms. Kahneman, could you do a very extensive study, sectional analysis?
Absolutely. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, in your packets you'll find a list of repealers. Because the bill is only lists repealers, I thought it would be more advantageous to do that versus a sectional. So the very first repealer deals with Title 24, actually the first 3, Title 24, 2231 sub 7, 271 sub 2, and 311B. All of those are conforming language changes that remove references to the performance reviews. Section 4466020 is your agency programs. That's what sets out the agency performance audits. And then 4466040 are the duties of the review team. So there's an extensive list of what that review team was to do. And the last one, section 4466070 sub 2, defines what the review team is. And Madam Chair, that's...
Thank you. Are there any questions on the sectional? Representative Josephson?
Chair, Ms. Kahneman, or Representative Thompson, I hate to ask something so elementary, but, you know, when I arrived here in 2013, I would have thought that we funded the things we say we're going to fund, but clearly somebody around 2016, and I probably touched it on the House floor without knowing it, that I was voting this way, may not have minded. But some powerful person in the building said, this must have been in the adjusted base at some point, and then it wasn't. Am I right about that?
Representative Josephson, through the chair, this budget request was put forward through LBNA, and then when Ledge Council reviews those budgets, Ledge Council had made the determination to not move forward with that. There was partial funding in 2016 for FY17, but then in FY18, 19, 20, and again this year for FY21, Ledge Council denied that increment moving forward. And Ms. Curtis may have additional
follow-up.
Just a comment that I see here. It says every year the Legislative Audit Division shall ensure, and I'm thinking of the PFD debate and the senior deduction and the things that Representative Christ Tompkins talked about. We are the appropriators for sure, and I'm just remembering that. That's all. Thank you.
Would you like to respond?
Just a point of clarification. Legislative Council does not review LBNA's budget. That's a separate appropriation. So it actually was cut in the House finance process in recognition of my, and so every year I do come back and provide a, ask for an increment because it's in my statutes and I have to. This year was $1.8 million. So that's quite a bit of funding for this process.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So is that one, so if I go down the list here, it lists, you know, which ones to, are to be done in what year. It looks like they did the first three on the list and then stopped at the Office of the Governor in 2017, Executive Branch and Court System. If, so is 1.8 million would cover like 1 year's worth, so whatever was listed for, well, I guess it depends on the year. So mm-hmm. that's one or two or three audits, depending on what's called for in that particular calendar year. Mm-hmm.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
just on that note, through the chair, what is the anticipated savings then with this particular piece of legislation to then not have the performance reviews?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, I think you're asking what is the savings we're going to realize out of this? This year's budget request was for $1.8 million, and it was removed from the budget, same as it was for the last 3 years. But so we're looking at, it hasn't been funded for going on 4 years now. Why do we have it in the statutes and have to list it every single year?
That's why I want to clarify. Thank you. Last comment. Last one.
Representative Wall.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that you said, that, Ms. Curtis, that a new approach should be made. I mean, it seems like there is some value to going through these agencies who are getting $300 million a year, and if it costs you $1 or $2 million, you might end up saving, you know, five, as you say. There's definitely savings to be had, and people want to cut budgets all the time, but there's ways to cut, and there's ways to really take a deep dive and see where you can operate more efficiently. So. I mean, it seems like there's some value, but if we're not doing them and we don't have them, yeah, sometimes you got to spend money to save money. But I appreciate that, and a new approach sounds reasonable.
Okay, seeing no further questions, we will open public testimony. Is there anyone online or in the room that would like to testify for this bill? Seeing no one, I'm closing public testimony. Before we go on to the next item, is there any further questions or discussions about this bill? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
At this time, I'm setting HB 121 aside. Next, I'd like to bring House Bill 209, an act relating to public finance, creating the Department of Management and Budget, transferring the duties of the Office of Management and Budget to the Department of Management and Budget and providing for effective date. And Representative Thompson, will you please present your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I'm Steve Thompson, House District 2 in Fairbanks. And I want to thank the committee again for hearing House Bill 209. House Bill 209 transfers the Office of Management and Budget to a freestanding budget agency. Currently, Office of Management and Budget is located within the Governor's Office. As an agency within the Executive Branch, the Commissioner of the Department of Management and Budget will be subject to legislative confirmation and their salary determined by the State Office Compensation Commission. This will also allow for additional legislative oversight during the budgetary process. There are 11 other states that require legislative confirmation for the state's chief budget official, 12 other states that have a freestanding budget agency. Since FY11, the annual salary for the director has increased from $136,400 to $195,000. Total undesignated general fund spending for this position is from $192,500 to, with benefits, $277,200. So it's a lengthy bill because it has to hit so many different agencies in the books, but basically all it's doing is changing the words Office of Management and Budget to Department of Management. And I have with me Crystal Keeneman from my staff, can answer a lot of questions if you have them, and she's done a lot of research on this, and she's very knowledgeable of this. Thank you.
Representative Bond.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I guess this question would be for whoever wishes to answer. You mentioned a lot of history and background information. Has this idea been floated out before, and has this been kind of churning in the background for a while?
Through the chair, Representative LeBond, no. This actually came up because of where we were last year, and we moved forward with it this year thinking that the legislator should have a little more oversight and knowledge of who's coming in to take over that position, and that's what got this started, and so we just kind of worked forward from there.
Thank you. Representative Wall.
Sure, why not? Aside from the salary considerations that you mentioned and confirmation, setting up a new department, I guess, not an agency, a new department, is there other sort of hurdles or costs that would be required as opposed to an office?
Madam Co-Chair, for the record, Crystal Keeneman, staff to Representative Thompson. Representative Wool, there are about 8 fiscal notes that you'll find in your packet. Walking through those, I know it at some point we'll get to the full money. But yes, there are additional costs that are associated with setting up an independent agency. You'll have shared services, costs, procurement, IT, those types of costs, they are minimal. And when we get to the fiscal note, we can walk more in depth on those, or Madam Co-Chair, however you wish to proceed.
Representative Knopp.
You know, Madam Co-Chair, thank you. No, the fiscal notes obviously is of interest to me, as there are numerous ones and they're all substantial, so I'm really looking forward and I guess as we get into them fiscal notes, I really hope we can get into the merits of each one, because it really is no better way to kill good legislation, if in fact that's what it is, than to put some atrocious fiscal notes on there. So I hope we dig into the details of what them are. So thank you.
So just for the committee, my intention is to go to the sectional analysis, and then we'll bring up the fiscal notes. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Ms. Keeneman, would these be consistent added costs into the budget as we move forward, or would these be one-time costs moving it to its own department?
Representative Ortiz, through the chair, my hope is that once things get moving, we could become budget neutral. So the costs that are associated currently with OMB being underneath the governor's office would be those costs moving forward as a standalone agency. And again, we would have that power through the budgetary process.
Representative Kelton.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Can you speak to whether there would be any diminishment of the separation of powers between the legislature and the executive branch by making this its own agency?
Absolutely. Representative Tilton, through the chair, we have not changed any of the powers and duties of the
the Office of Management and Budget, the statutes that are currently in place is the language that is contained in this piece of legislation. The only difference, as Representative Thompson has mentioned, is the change from where it says office to department and where it says director to commissioner. Otherwise, the services that they are set to provide currently is what they would they provide in the future.
Could we now go to the sectional analysis?
Yes, ma'am. Sections 1 through 30, I'll kind of bulk these together best as I can so we can get through these 20 pages quickly. Sections 1 through 30 are conforming language changes that update the language from office to department and director to commissioner. Section 31, AS 4417005, deals with the offices and departments, and it adds the Department of Management and Budget to the list of principal departments of our state. Section 32 proposes a new chapter in Title 44, that being Chapter 22. The first section of that, 4422010, outlines the Commissioner of Management and Budget and establishes them as the principal office of that department. 4422020 are the powers and duties of the commissioner. This language is identical to the current powers and duties of the director that's listed in 4419144. You'll also notice at the end of the bill that is one of the sections being repealed, but that's conforming language. Sections 4422030 deals with the powers and duties of the department. Again, this is identical language to the current powers and duties of the department under 4419145. Section 4422040 deals with the internal audit records. This requires the departments to keep a complete file of audit reports. And again, this is current language that's contained in 4419147. Section 4422050 deals with definitions, and it provides a definition for the commissioner and the Department of Management and Budget. Moving on to then sections 33 and 35 of the bill, this is again conforming language that modifies the language from office to department. Sections 36 repeals those statutes that are related to the Office of Management and Budget, since we have now set out a new department. Sections 37 is transitional language that allows for the transfer of information, documents, if there are any current suits or anything against the current Office of Management and Budget, those will continue until they are worked out through this transition. And sections 38 provides for a January 1, 2020 effective date. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm available for questions.
Representative Merrick.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Has OMB taken a position on this legislation?
Representative Merrick, through the chair, I don't believe they have, not to our office.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you go back to section 32, Ms. Coleman. So is it, I'm just looking for clarification to make sure I understand. So is it the intent that this commissioner would also be the OMB director position, or would you have a commissioner and then you have to hire an OMB director? Are we creating duplicate positions, or just clarification in my mind, please?
Absolutely, Representative Knopp, through the chair. Our intention is that the positions that are currently with OMB, the director and all of their staff that's currently listed in their personal service expenditure would be the staff for this. I know that the fiscal notes have additional positions listed, but our intention with this legislation is to transfer the office as it currently stands to a standalone department.
Okay, thank you.
My hope was that drafting with legal, we could just modify the language in statute
just, you know, but with the Constitution, it wasn't so easy.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So that being said, do you foresee a deputy commissioner? Because usually if there's a commissioner, there's a deputy commissioner. And would that be, is there the parallel position existing, like assistant director or something? Would there be a straight transfer over? Because we know whenever there's a commissioner, there's usually at least one deputy commissioner.
Representative Wolf, through the chair, our intention is not necessarily, in name, they probably would be the deputy commissioner. But I know, depending on the governor, depending on how they have set up their Office of Management and Budget, sometimes there is a deputy director, and our intention would be as if whatever that comparable level of position would be the deputy for this.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now we'll go to the fiscal note, and in the room, Sylvan Robb isn't. Maybe you could also come up and put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sylvan Robb. I'm a policy analyst at the Office of Management and Budget. With your permission, I'll just go through the 8 fiscal notes that OMB has submitted related to this bill. So I would just like to note, as we get started, that the state of Alaska has not created a new department from whole cloth since sometime prior to 1975. We actually ran out of time to continue researching back, but it's been many, many years since a new department was created from scratch. So members of the committee have 8 fiscal notes before them. There are not component numbers to refer to for ease, unfortunately, because obviously these are not components that exist currently. The proposed new Department of Management and Budget would be comprised of 4 appropriations with 7 allocations. And I believe in your packets, the first fiscal note you come to is for the internal audit appropriation. As you can see there, that creates a division of internal audit. As Ms. Curtis mentioned earlier, this is something that has been defunded for many years, but it is contained in the statute of this bill. And so the assumption we operated under was that there would be interest in restarting this function. The last time the position was filled, there was one position that was still filled in December of 2012, and that was taken off the books as part of a cleanup, since it had been empty for many years, a number of years ago.
Madam Chair.
Representative Ortiz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I'm looking at the right fiscal notes. Could you give me some others, kind of reference, maybe the identifier at the top that you're referring to?
Through the Chair, Representative Ortiz, yes, certainly. So the identifier is HB209-gov-DIA. And then the date, 3/2/20.
DIA, okay.
Yeah. Or if you look down the right side above where the component number would normally be, you'll see Department of Management and Budget, and then the appropriation and allocation are both internal audit.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I understand correctly, and I think Ms. Curtis said it as well, and I think you just said it, that we have quit the internal audit programs, but you put it in there because that's what statute says. So you just assumed we want to go back to that. Is that, did I hear that correctly?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, that is correct. It is contained in Representative Thompson's bill. And so the assumption would be that the desire was for those functions to be restarted.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
So, but currently we have no other internal auditors in any of our departments. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, within the Department of Administration, the Division of Finance does do single audit work, but OMB no longer performs audit work.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Lebon.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Is there any bargaining units that touch the OMB department staffing-wise? Or is it completely outside the bargaining unit influence?
Through the chair, Representative Laban, the way OMB is currently structured, because it is part of the governor's office, all staff are fully exempt. If we became a department, certainly some of the positions would be the same as positions that are in the classified service. And so that would have to be looked at to see if those positions should appropriately move to classified. All right, I'll move on to the second fiscal note in your packet, and the identifier on this one is HB209-gov-DBA, and then March 2nd, 2020. If you look at the right, you'll see Department of Management and Budget, Budget Analysis, and then the allocation is also Budget Analysis. This division represents the majority of OMB as it currently exists. So these are the positions covered by the budget analyst that we currently have, as well as the chief budget analyst, and with the addition of an assistant, which is a position that we had until quite recently. All right, moving on to the third fiscal note. The identifier on this one is HB209-gov-DAS, followed by the date. The department, again, Department of Management and Budget, the appropriation would be Administrative Services, and the allocation would be Administrative Services. Currently, OMB is part of the governor's office, and so the administrative services covered by this fiscal note are services that are provided to us as part of the governor's office. So we are able to take advantage of governor's office procurement staff, human resources staff, finance officer, ASD, all of those positions. And with this being a department, those positions would need to be created so that we could provide those services to the department. Moving on to the fourth fiscal note, this the identifier for this.
Representative Wall.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick, you just mentioned these would have to be created. So these are all new positions, this particular fiscal note, as opposed to moving one to the other.
Through the chair to Representative Wall, that is correct, because currently we get these services from the governor's office.
Representative Ortiz.
Can you give me a little bit more breakdown of those kinds of services that you're talking about? I think you mentioned procurement and some things like that. Can you elaborate a little bit further as to what these four positions are? These, what, how many positions are we talking? Five positions?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Ortiz. So these are positions that, again, would provide the services that we currently get from the governor's office. So
such as?
They are for an administrative services director to be the same as the other executive branch departments that have the administrative services director function, a finance officer. You always need to have two people in those financial positions because people can't certify each other's work, so as part of a check and balance. There's a budget manager for the department, a procurement specialist, and then a human resources consultant. We do anticipate in the out years of the fiscal note that at least one of those positions would no longer be needed, as the consolidation efforts that are underway currently for procurement and human resources come to fruition.
Thank you.
And just a reminder, floor is at 10. So if we can go through the rest of the fiscal notes and save your questions to the end.
The fourth fiscal note is the identifier is HB209-gov-CO. The appropriation and allocation shown on the right are administrative services and then the commissioner's office. As this creates a new department, obviously that comes with a commissioner's office. Three of the staff shown here are existing staff, so in answer to one of the earlier questions, there is a deputy director at OMB, and the assumption is that person would become the deputy commissioner for the new department. Director Steininger has an assistant, that person would continue, and then there would be a special assistant to act as legislative liaison and other duties that are normally filled by that role. The fifth fiscal note is the identifier is HB209-gov-PP-0302-20. The appropriation and allocation are policy and planning. These are three policy positions. These currently exist within the Department of Management and Budget, and they would continue under this new role, the policy analysis function within OMB. So, the sixth fiscal note, the identifier for this one is HB209-gov-SDC, which on the right you can see the appropriation is policy and planning, the allocation is statewide data clearinghouse. This represents our current programmer who maintains the Alaska budget system, where all budgeting for the state happens. And then with the addition of a research analyst in anticipation of the internal audit and the collection of additional data to make the best use of that data to make sure that we can get good value for having that resource. The seventh fiscal note is identifier HB209-gov-ASD 030220. The appropriation is policy and planning, and the allocation is centralized administrative services directors. This does not represent a change. As many of you remember, the administrative services directors were moved into OMB by Executive Order 307, and this just continues that situation, and so this represents the ASDs continuing to be part of this new department. And then finally, the eighth fiscal note, one that thankfully actually has a component number. This is component 1244, and this is the fiscal note that represents the removal of funding for the Office of Management and Budget.
Thank you. At this time, I'm going to open this up for public testimony. Is there anyone in the room or online that would like to testify? Seeing no one, I'm going to close public testimony. Does anybody have brief questions before we set this bill aside? I'm sure folks will want to take some time looking at the fiscal notes.
Just one 30-second comment. Not even that. Thank you, Madam Chair. So you mentioned the salaries of the commissioner earlier, determined by the Salary Commission, Compensation Commission. I just happen to know some of these, like the policy planner, that's a range 27,229,000. That's considerably more than the commissioner, it looks like, correct? I mean, is that, that's standard, that's normal type numbers? That shouldn't shock anyone. 229 for the policy.
Representative Wolf, through the chair, it's not uncommon in other departments to have the commissioners topped out at their 135, which is set up by the Salary Compensation Commission, and to have a director level position at a range 27 who has additional steps to outrank essentially the commissioner in terms of pay.
Representative Knopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, it's not really a question. It is a comment. It's interesting, and I apologize, I don't remember your name, but she did state that we haven't created a new department since 1974. Is that what I heard you say in your opening comments?
Through the chair, Representative Knopp, we were struggling to find the last time it happened. We got as far back as 1975 before we ran out of time looking for a new department.
Thank you. So I guess it's an interesting conversation because we probably haven't had this in a number of years, and it really clearly shows how we manage and staff our departments. And I think it's a great review and the opportunity when we talk about the internal audits that we really don't do, and then a research analysis for the internal auditors. And so as we go forward, I think it's a great conversation to take a look at really how we're conducting our business in our department. So
Thank you. And with that said, at this time, I'm setting HB 209 aside. Our next meeting is scheduled this afternoon, Monday, March 2nd at 1:30 p.m., but we do not have any bills on the agenda. Do any members have anything they'd like to bring up before we go to the floor? Seeing none, the time is 9:53, and we are adjourned.